I love a good mystery, and I also love solving them. One type of clickbait post that I'm always a sucker for are those listicles that are titled something like 25 Greatest Unsolved Mysteries or 10 Biggest Historical Mysteries That Will Probably Never Be Solved. Don't you already want to know what they are? Click, click, click. The Voynich Manuscript. The Somerton Man. I love the names of them. The Wow Signal. Rongo Rongo. Please resist the urge to Google them while we're in worship. You can ask me later. One favorite mystery for me is the one called the Kryptos Sculpture. The Kryptos Sculpture is a sculpture created by an artist, an American artist named Jim Sanborn. And it's displayed on the grounds of the CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia. The sculpture incorporates four secret messages that Sanborn encoded with the help of a retired CIA employee. Three of the messages were solved within a few years after the sculpture was dedicated in 1990. The fourth message has never been decoded. Despite being the focus of intense analysis by hundreds of amateur and professional cryptoanalysts, and despite being physically located on the grounds of the agency that probably includes more experts in the field than any other place in the world, we don't know the message. That's kind of thrilling to me. Another favorite mystery of mine is the classical music piece called the Enigma Variations, composed by Sir Edward Elgar in 1899. The actual title of the piece is Variations on an Original Theme, and it is simply and mysteriously 14 variations on a theme. It's a beautiful piece of music, but there are several mysteries associated with this piece. The easiest to solve is that each of the 14 variations is titled with two or three letters. The letters turned out to be the initials of the names of several of Elgar's friends, and the movements are meant to be musical portraits of the people that are indicated. A second mystery is that one of the movements is titled with just an asterisk. It turns out that that movement is meant to be a portrait of Elgar's mistress, a secret that he meant to keep from his wife. But the biggest enigma of the Enigma Variations is that, according to Elgar, the main theme is never played. Elgar stated that the tune that you do hear throughout the piece is actually a counterpoint that harmonizes with some other unnamed but supposedly well-known tune. What tune that is, the enigma, is still an enigma. A 120-year-old mystery that's never been solved. Something about that never been solved thrills me, but also fills me with anxiety. I like mysteries, but I want them to be solved. I like questions, but I want questions to have answers. I love that the world is wide and deep and endlessly available for further exploration. But the fun of exploring is not just going into the dark, but going into the dark and then turning on the light. A couple of weeks ago, we had a town hall meeting here at the church, and we started our meeting with a check-in, which is where we go around the circle and we invite everybody to share how they're feeling and maybe share a story of something that happened that day that's still turning in their mind or in their heart. So at this check-in, somebody shared that they were obsessed by playing a computer solitaire game, and that they've been playing it all afternoon. So we all had a chuckle about that. And then as we went around the room, somebody else said that they played the same computer solitaire game, and we laughed again. And then a third person in the circle said that they were currently on a winning streak on that game, and they were about to pass their best ever record. I did not share that evening, but I will come clean now. I also play computer solitaire. Now, I don't play video games at all. I have no interest in shooting zombies or rescuing princesses or whatever you do in those games. But I like to play solitaire, and here's what I like about it. Essentially, The goal of solitaire is to take a deck of cards that has been shuffled randomly, and then, following a set of rules, to take the unorganized cards and put them into order. The game of solitaire is basically just taking a mess and cleaning it up. We usually have to pay people to do that kind of work. Take this stack of invoices and go file them alphabetically. Take this mixed up set of cards and organize them by number and suit. Washing dishes and putting them back in the cupboard feels like work to me, but doing essentially the same thing with a deck of cards feels like play. Who knows why? For me, there is something essentially satisfying and relaxing about seeing the messiness of the world and then mentally putting it into order. Even cleaning my apartment gives me some of that same good feeling. Putting things where they go, whether it's dirty socks or disorganized ideas, it's taking a mystery and solving it. It's finding the key to a secret code. To know something is to put the world in order. This is like that. This properly goes over here. Knowing is asking why and then finding out. Here's why. Because. And that feels really good to me. Michael Lide, who's one of our church members here, asked me to co-facilitate a class that he was leading at the church for several weeks. It was the fourth session of a program centered on issues around death and dying called Death Cafe. So the evening that I co-facilitated, we talked about various beliefs about life after death. And of course, no one knows. What happens after we die is truly one of life's greatest mysteries that will probably never be solved. But I pointed out that in people's various imaginings of what might happen in the afterlife, people tend to hope that three problems will get solved in the next life that are unsolvable in this life. One problem is that in this life, we face heartbreak constantly. In life, we constantly form personal connections with other people, and then inevitably, we lose them. Our love affair ends, our children move away. Eventually, for everyone, life ends in death, and we are alone. So people often imagine an afterlife where we will be reunited with those we have lost and never lose them again. Another problem of this life is the essential injustice of the fact that there seems to be no real connection between being good and being happy. Some really despicable people seem to do really well in life. You might think of an example. Meanwhile, some really wonderful people suffer horribly. It feels like there ought to be a quid pro quo between being morally virtuous and being physically healthy and materially satisfied, but there isn't in this life. So a lot of people imagine an afterlife where the good people finally get to go to their reward. And the third problem in this life that we hope will get solved in the next is the problem that I've been talking about today, the problem of unsolved mystery. We want existence to make sense, and oftentimes it doesn't seem to. We want to put our lives in order, and so much about life seems random. We want to know why, and sometimes we aren't told. So for a lot of folks, one feature of the afterlife is the chance to finally stand in front of God and find out what it's all about. As St. Paul put it in his first letter to the congregation in Corinth, "When I was a child, I spoke as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now, we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know the same as I am known." Well, to St. Paul, I say, perhaps. Perhaps then we shall know all that we desire to know, but not today. We don't know it all today. And I think we never will. We have to learn to be satisfied with not knowing. The drive to understand the universe and our lives leads to endless exploration and answers are always being discovered, but the answers we find invariably lead to more questions. Complete wisdom is ever out of our reach. It's like playing an endless game of solitaire and never being able to put that last king on the last pile. When we are anxious, when we are afraid, when we are faced with a mystery in our lives, we seek comfort in understanding. We ask, why? A troubling situation explained helps us contain our anxiety. An explanation can't undo a bad situation, but it helps us to put a frame around it and then set it aside. Okay, then, we can say, that mystery is solved, now I can move on. But when the mystery isn't solved, the anxiety stays with us year after year, like the Kryptos sculpture or the Enigma variations. The deck of cards stays out of order. When faced with a human tragedy, like a school shooting, for instance, we rush to ask why. We look for answers. What happened? Why did it happen? We stay tuned for the press conference and we listen for the explanations. Why did they do it? The sense is that if we had perfect knowledge, then we could take steps to be perfectly protected, perhaps in the future. But that is, in most cases, a false hope. We can't have perfect knowledge, not ever, at least in this life. And even perfect knowledge of some past event wouldn't prepare us for the necessarily different circumstances of the events of the future. It is our truth in this life to not know. To know three of the messages on the crypto sculpture, but not the last. To guess that the 13th variation of the Enigma variations is a portrait of Elgar's mistress, Helen Weaver, but not to ever know the main theme that plays beneath our lives from birth to death. And think honestly what cold comfort knowledge really is. We can usually find some of the answers that we seek. We can put together a timeline of the day, and we can trace where everyone was and how the various pieces of the event happened to come together in the way that they did. But the why that we ask is usually deeper than that. When faced with a troubling event, we don't just want the facts, we want the meaning behind the facts. Not how did it happen, but why did it happen? Not just the physics of the event, but the theology of the event. And there, inevitably, we touch the mystery. What is the meaning in the death of a child? What is the meaning in a tragedy? What is the meaning behind the multiple incidences, good and bad, that happen to us every day? You won't find the meaning simply by adding up the facts. Meaning comes from a whole different realm. Sometimes we just can't know all that we want to know. Sometimes the information just isn't available, or it can't be shared with us. What's the why behind a hurricane or a lightning strike? Why weren't we chosen for that job or that opportunity? Sometimes there just isn't a rational explanation. Sometimes the only answer we will ever get to our pleading questions of why is a silent and sympathetic shrug. Sometimes events just happen. So it's natural when facing a mystery to seek for comfort in understanding, but it's also wise to know the limits of knowledge. We can never know everything, and very often we can only know very little. And gathering knowledge anyway leads to a frustrating dead end if what we really want is the meaning behind the facts. We see through a glass darkly. Knowledge can only ever be sufficient to provide part of the comfort we seek. So, where else, when facing the pains of life, besides knowledge, might we turn? So, as I said, I've outed myself now. I like solitaire. Others are frustrated by it, or they're bored. Putting the disordered into order is comforting to me, but there are different kinds of people. I'm the type of person who seeks to understand the world. I'm motivated by the quest for knowledge and wisdom. My spiritual personality is that, being a finite human being confronted with the overwhelming reality of the universe, I find my strength to bear up against the infinite by retreating into my own mind and inventing systems and theories that explain the universe to me, or at least attempt to explain it. So I'm exactly the kind of person that, when confronted with some disturbing event in my life, immediately starts asking why. I want the disordered story to fit together into a theory that I can grasp. And that's why history's greatest unsolved mysteries are so attracting to me and so annoying also. But confronting the chaos of existence with understanding is just one type of person. One strategy for making peace with the overwhelming enormity of reality. And regardless of which main type you are, I'm about to give you several examples, all of these strategies can provide some comfort when knowledge alone isn't enough. So here are some other strategies you could try to find comfort in a troubling situation when knowledge isn't available or sufficient. Connect with tradition and the comfort of a shared community like this one. Move through life with a sense of humor and joy, taking the troubles of the world lightly. Take comfort in your own strength to confront the hardships of the world with power and with purpose. Identify the common values between points of view that seem to be in conflict and are creating disharmony. Name and defend clear moral guidelines, set boundaries, and connect to ideals, like we did earlier today. Be of service, selflessly responding to the needs of others, and get out of your own head. Move to imagination, creativity, and inventing oneself into the role that circumstances require. And lastly, another option is to take comfort in the mystery itself, finding the beauty in the mystery, even if it's a tragic beauty. When we are troubled and we can't know, those are the places to go to find the comfort that we need. We sang about all of them in our opening hymn. Peace that turns away the enmities of strife, the beauty of the earth, its flowers and lovely things, the joy of spring with sound and songs and wings, the service and the toil of those who bring in the harvest to feed others, the gifts of hope and love, of wisdom, truth, and right. Those are the gifts that shine like stars above to chart the world by night, the gifts that go into the darkness of the world and turn on the light. Knowing the answer to the mystery is one way to turn on a light, but the light can also be illuminated by deepening our covenant with community, by releasing our anxieties through humor and joy, by feeling our power, by finding peace inside what looks scary, by affirming our ideals, by refocusing our attention toward the needs of others, by using our creativity to invent what we need, by loving the beautiful gift of existence even in its mystery. Life consists of, as Dag Hammarskjöld said, being driven into an unknown land. And that can be scary, but it's also the fun of life. When the fret and fever of the day gets to be too much, let there be moments when we turn away. But instead of always turning to knowledge, 24-hour cable news and Twitter and Googling the answer before the question's even finished asking, sometimes you might choose community, humor, strength and purpose, peace, affirming ideals, being of service, invoking creativity, or simple appreciation of the beautiful mystery of it all. When finite wisdom isn't enough, in quietness and solitude we find the soundless wisdom of the deeper mind. I thank you for listening.